to express my joy in being here with you, meeting old friends and new friends, and feeling the sincerity of our fellowship, the genuine friendliness and care and devotion toward that, toward which we are all drawn in devotion. The possibility to glorify the one, to live in a state of service, to witness the unfoldment of beauty. And I'm mindful that this gathering is the fruit of many months of conscientious work on the part of many, and especially in the last couple of days, a lot of intensive efforts, seen and unseen, and full of gratitude for that generosity of spirit, the divine impulse working through the care that's been shown here. And so many have offered a helping hand in so many different ways. And that inspires us all to extend our own hands in our lives as we go forward, wherever we find ourselves. Over these 2 days, I've been speaking a lot, and you've been listening a lot. And in that sense, the transaction might appear unilateral. But that's not how I experience it. You remember we spoke earlier of comics and how thoughts are also words. And your attention, your visualizations, your soul presence, the atmosphere that you emanate, your participation in what we're building in the invisible realm, has been constant. So this is something that we've built together. We've come together and built something in the invisible. And it's like a camp in the desert among the nomads, traveling on camelback and pausing somewhere overnight, setting up tents, lighting fires, but then in the morning taking everything down and traveling on. So we've created something in the invisible, and now we're going our different ways. But we carry in us the fragrance of what has been discovered here, and certainly a theme of our gathering has been that not all events or connections are visible. And so even as we become invisible to one another through our outer senses, we'll remain visible through the inner senses and connected through links that are not limited by the bounds of time and space. And yet even saying that, I'm hoping we'll meet again in physical form and would like to warmly welcome you to come. Come to Richmond, where we have a center, but also I travel a lot. I hope we'll keep meeting wherever we can, in the visible world and in the invisible world. And with one another, stay connected. Keep up this friendship of the path, because the destination is not far, far away. Every footstep is another portion of the destination. And every companion is a face of the one one is going to meet. So I have been speaking a lot, but we haven't had any chance so far to open a space for a question that you might have. Perhaps in the course of the last 2 days, something that's been said seemed unclear or raised a question. Well, you have a few minutes. If you have something to ask now,
in relation to Nora Nisa, the film that was made on her life, is that out now? Can we see that?
Oh, yes.
I know that there have been articles that have been out recently about her too.
Yes.
And the stamp that was to be in her name in England is not to be anymore. And so I just have a question of how her life is going to be out more now for all of us.
First of all, I thank you for that question, because any mention of the name of Nora Nisa just exalts my spirit. And now, as to films, there have been a number of proposed films, as well as some films already in progress. And there's one documentary that has already been produced, which is called Enemy of the Reich. The title is maybe, I don't know, I don't prefer the word enemy, but anyway, quite a good movie, actually. And so that one is available, one can watch it online. And then there are other ones that I understand are currently being filmed. So we're all just waiting to see what comes next. Yeah.
Do you know if you will be traveling to Zenith, the Sufi camp in the Swiss Alps, this upcoming summer?
God willing. For the last 20 years, without fail, I have I have gone, and so very much hope again this summer to be there, and would like to invite you and everyone here to visit there.
Thank you.
Hello, Pirzia. You mentioned Richmond. If we were to go visit Richmond, what would we discover and what are you offering there these days?
Yeah, good question. Yes, well, Latifa is a neighbor from days at the abode. As some of you may know, I've moved with my family from the abode. We lived there for many years, and only about a year ago moved to Richmond, Virginia. And right now in Richmond, there's still leaves on the trees. So I feel coming here, I've gone a few weeks into the future. Now I'll be going back in time to the autumn. So one will find more golden leaves. One will find a river running through the city. One will find a charming city that is one of the earliest American cities with some specimens of very old architecture, including the center. But also a city that is fraught with some of the dark shadows of American history. A city that was the seat of the Confederacy during the Civil War. And a city that was one of the two primary slave markets where slaves arrived, enslaved peoples. People who had been enslaved in Africa were brought on ships and packed into confined, dark spaces without any sort of hygienic provisions for months, and then unloaded in the darkness and separated from speakers of the same language and made to march toward an unknown destiny. So one just imagines the horror of those experiences. And in fact, my wife and myself had the chance to be part of a journey in which we were led by African-American historians who recounted, we went through the different sites of the slave trade, including the place of landing, and in a Yoruba ceremony, we put our hands on the ground and felt a jolt right then. You could really feel the energy of the ground putting your hand in that ceremonial moment. And we were made to walk with ropes around us in single file and faces down. And the slave masters yelling words of rebuke. And that was just the smallest inkling of what was experienced there and subsequently. So it was one of the great horrors of this nation's history. And so that's part of what one will find there. I didn't expect to arrive in Richmond, and had in fact planned just to pass right by. But something brought us there, and as soon as I got there and happened, it turns out, to stand right in front of what is now our center, the Astana, not knowing that building was even for sale, but just happening to come off the highway and land there, already it was clear that this was where we had to go. So this is a city of polarities, of light and darkness, a fraught, vexed history, but also emerging artistry and social justice and a culture that is efflorescing, especially through the immediacy of a very wonderfully active university. And so we're finding, we're making friends there. We met a Sufi sheikh who himself had just arrived. We've made common cause. He's rooted in the African Sufi tradition of the Senegalese order, the Mouridia, and making friends, and also friends from all over the country come and visit us. We have a Thursday evening healing service and zikr just about every week. And then on Sundays, we have a gatha class, which is open to everyone, and read the gatha paper. We have a meditation. We study the iron and copper and silver and golden rules and the 10 Sufi thoughts. And now, actually, those classes are also being video recorded and webcast, live cast, so you can watch them simultaneously. And if anyone wants to be part of what we're doing there, you can easily take part that way on Sundays. Whenever I'm not traveling, generally we have a Sunday class, and you can tune in around 3 o'clock. So those are a few glimpses of Richmond, and I do warmly invite you all.
Thank you, Pirzia, for all your beautiful teachings. I'm wondering if you might just say a word about how this incredible lineage is passed down in the Shistya order, and if I might be so bold or maybe humbled to ask, might there be in the future, maybe not in my lifetime, but in another lifetime, a woman who might be part of the leadership in terms of being part of the silsila?
Yes, well, actually you've seen it in your lifetime, retrospectively. I don't know if you heard about this, but there was already a question that lifted my spirits mentioning the name of Noor. Now I want to come back to Noor, because Noor was the first child of Murshid and the Begum, born in Moscow, and she, when Murshid passed away and the Begum was bedridden after that, Noor took charge of the whole family and really was the inspirer of them all, and certainly of my father. So in that sense, she was, after Murshid, she was his guide. I believe that. So, and all of his life, he looked back toward her with such reverence that she did guide his spirit. And he said, you may have seen that book of his, Toward the One, and in the frontispiece it says, dedicated to my sister Noor, the first saint of this order in the West. So, he indicates that really after Murshid, the primary succession of wilaya can be seen in her. And but she hasn't figured in the official silsila lists until last year. And that's when on the day of the Urs in Suren at Fazl Manzil, we made a proclamation and signed that proclamation, and therefore now if you look on the website, you look at the silsila, Hazrat Pir Murshid Inayat Khan, Pirzadi Shahida Noor Inayat Khan. So you've seen it in your lifetime. but that's retrospective. But going toward the future, yes, there's no there's no bias one way or the other in terms of who could succeed in any role within this order. It's open to people of all genders. Okay.
So the fragmentation, it seems on the face of it that the diversity of traditions has been the source of a great deal of suffering and strife in the world. So basically, how can we come to trust that this is ultimately to the good?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. And I would say perhaps just to modify the language of the proposition, that it's not so much the diversity of sacred traditions that is problematic, but the disharmony among the interpreters of the prophetic legacies. So an analogy to come back to again is the physical body. Our body is diverse. The different organs, each one of them, has a different function in the totality, and we don't want to, the body. If the body is all one thing, it isn't as rich and complete. So the diversity of the themes in Revelation is providential. Revelation works incrementally, developing themes over the course of history, showing different vistas, different highlighting different attributes, while each revelation contains at its heart, at its common core, the whole revelation. So, and that's true of the body too, because every cell is differentiated according to its function in one's anatomy, but in every cell is the genetic code of the whole body. So every revelation has in it the universal vision, but that universal vision is customized to a certain historical epoch, to a certain dispensation of the divine mercy, and they work, therefore, overlappingly, harmonically. But that then isn't understood in successive generations, and the consequences, the followers of the followers, or with the distance from the immediacy of the experience of revelation, comes all of this reframing and reconceptualization, which is oftentimes under the influence of power politics and motives which are sometimes rooted in fear-based aggression. And so as it is, the worldly concerns enter into religion, and the pure spirituality of revelation becomes alienating politics and estranging dogma. So the great opportunity is to rediscover the oneness of the message, and that discovery, when it comes as a great tide of awakening. And I trust we will see that more and more. We are seeing it already in the inspired ones who emerge out of the traditions, but through dialogue, through unveiling, through discovery, find themselves kin. And of course, a great, you may have it with you, Saracen Chivalry is a book that's here. And that book is about that in the sense that it tells the story of just this discovery when there are two knights who are battling each other. One is a Saracen, a Muslim, and the other is a Christian, namely Parsifal. And Parsifal, the sword of Parsifal breaks, and Pheraphys is able to deal the death blow, but he refrains chivalrously. And so the two sit down together on the grass and talk. And he says, who are you? He says, my name is Phirephis, the Angevin. And he says, you're not an Angevin. I'm an Angevin. I'm Parsifal the Angevin. And they said, well, I'm also Angevin, son of Gamaret. I'm also son of Gamaret. And then, so they had no idea that Parsifal had no idea his father had a Muslim son. And in this story, in a way, Gamaret represents Abraham, Abrahamic source that has given rise to these three lineages, Judaic, Christian, and Muslim. And the day that they discover their common ancestry and that they are of one family of revelation, there will be a great reunion. And that reunion doesn't mean homogeneity, they have to become all the same, but it means discovering kinship. And I would say we can go beyond that also, because it's not only the Abrahamic faiths, but the Vedic faiths are part of the same tree of revelation. And in India, Darashikuh discovered the confluence of the two oceans, of the Vedic and the Beni Israeli ocean. So that's a wonderful discovery in our time. And by the way, Noor was extremely intent on it, and she speaks about the tongues of flame that came to the apostles, and that the real meaning of this is the rediscovery of the message, which is one language that has been translated into so many idioms, but one universal language that will be rediscovered. And therefore, speech will be, then thereby the speaker will know all languages. So friends, this conversation certainly is igniting me, and at the same time, I'm very conscious that the moment has come to acknowledge the advent of a sacred season that is here now, and we want to honor it, and at the same time, it's a chance for me to turn to Hermione, who has done so much to make this gathering possible, just poured her whole heart into it, and she knows and tells me, and we all feel that not only has she done so much herself, but she has been part of the work of so many joined together, and she's going to explain this more, and then we'll celebrate the sacred season that is upon us almost right now. And also be lifted up on waves of music.
Thank you, Pircea. So I just want to acknowledge, as Pircea has just done, that this could not happen without the dedicated effort of every person who's given any kind thought to the seminar happening, put out a card, hung a flyer, handled finances, bought plants, and spent much time creating a beautiful visual garden to welcome our peer, stretching, music, talking to friends about the seminar, inviting people. There are so many, many, many ways that many people have helped. I just want to read the names. And perhaps each person could stand. They may not all be here. Abu Hashim. You can stay standing. It's a good visual to see how many people who are here. Alita, Almas, Carol, Anka, Akil, Alia, Azimat, Baraka,
Brinalee Jamila is not here. She's the mom of two children, but she was here Friday night. Carl, Carla, Ghazal was here Friday night and helped to set up your rooms. And when I asked if she would do that task, she said, "It would be my greatest privilege." Me. Hurash, Jane, Kalimi, Genevieve, Lakshmi, and Joe, Lakshmi and Joe, Lucilena and Lucia, Mahbood, Naima, Kalbi, Kutsia, Sarah, Safira, Tajeli, Baraka's daughter Tatiana and her husband helped bring posters to their universities. That's Tatiana and Nick. Tim, Walia, Yaquin and Maria Cristina. Maria Cristina, I'm sorry, you're out of alphabetical order. Yaquin and Maria Cristina, Zulfikara, and if I've forgotten anyone, please stand. If I've forgotten anyone, please stand and please forgive me. And Junaid, who wasn't really on the Boston team, but by bringing the whole project and his own beautiful work, has been part of our team. So I think we have now the music of Lucilena and Lucia. This is a Rumi poem that Lucilena has set to music. And I believe the poem is called Dance When You're Broken.
This is a translation of Coleman Barks that I changed only slightly. And you're welcome to ignite your bodies of light. If you want to move around, there's plenty of space. When you're broken open, dance. When you've torn the bandage off, dance. In the middle of the fight, your own blood, and then when perfectly free, the dancer step to the tambourine with it. And if you do not hear a tambourine or all the leaves clapping time, close the ears on
your head. Do not listen to lies or cynical jokes. Like a wave, break and crash, foam and spray. So much to feel, so much to hear. It's the music of your soul in that city of light, in that city of old. That place will never be cold. When you're broken open, dance. When you've torn the bandage off, dance. In the middle of the fight, in your own blood, and then when perfectly free, the dancer step to the tambourine within.
Subhanallah, subhanallah.
the story of a great miracle. So way back, actually it was 165 BCE, before the Common Era, there was a king, Antiochus. He was a Greek Syrian, and he enslaved the Jews for 3 years. Finally, a great warrior, but actually a beautiful being, Judas Maccabee, led the Jews in a whole uprising and winning back that temple in Jerusalem. And so what happened, even though the oil and everything else was really defiled, they were able to find a menorah, the menorah that was called the Ner Tamid, the eternal light that is supposed to burn all the time. But they only had oil for one night, and miraculously, that oil lasted for eight years, right? So we celebrate that, and the sages of the time created a permanent holiday of praise and thanksgiving. So we celebrate that. It's come down all this time, and I just invite everybody who knows the prayers, the blessings, to do them with us. And Alita's going to read the English. So, Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech halom Asher kitchanu b'mitzvato v'tzivanu lehadlik ner shel Chanukah.
Okay.
So the next thing is that Pirzia has said that we could have a group picture together. So I'm thinking that perhaps the people on the stage could stay on the stage. Maybe, is it okay? So Alita, you're there. Maybe you could come over by the palm. Okay, Baraka. And then others, maybe Sarah. Oh, Sarah, you're going to take the picture. Nirtana and Walia, maybe, you know, here in front of the plants. Safira, maybe, you know. Actually, if you ladies go to that side, and then Naima and Shelley and Martha by the plants here. And, wowie. So I think we need the tallest people. So if you feel like you're tall, come stand here, from here to here. Come on down, don't be shy. Tall folks on the sides. This is good. Medium folks, you're tall. Come on. And I should say, only if you want to come. Can you help fix it? They're going to be on the stage. Okay. Come in close. The tall folks, we're going to layer. Come in close. Yeah, I don't think sitting down. Standing up. And then medium people, make a second row sort of staggered. Stagger, like in between the... Yeah, that's a good idea. He's got it turning to the side. That's really good. Okay. That's good. Yes, short people. Short people, come and be the last. Maybe you could sit on the stage. Like with that? Leave Pirzia's spot open so that we can see him. Okay. Okay, there's some room just next to Nirtana on the steps. Is there any room next to you, Shirley? Or yes, over there by those steps, is there room? A few people could go up there. Okay. And then Sarah, are you? Oh, that's brilliant. Okay. And I guess I'm kind of medium.
I store it. Up there. Isn't it? Azima bought it, and I store it.
Oh,
that's good. Yeah.